Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Lovers, welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Joining me on the line, I'm skipping the pleasantries because on the line with me is somebody I try to have on at least once a year. He is a chef, he is on TV, and occasionally he's a sparring partner for his lovely wife, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm crazy busy, but loving life.
And Robert is going to be back on Food Network on Sunday, August 12th with Worst. He'll be on Worst Cooks in America, his first time since 2011. And apparently, sir, there's some unfinished business.
Yeah, well, you know, Ann and I have this feisty relationship, shall we say. And when we left 2011, Worst Cooks, I was not happy, for sure, for a lot of reasons. So it's redemption time.
Good rivalry there. So, okay.
Yeah,
so,
oh yeah, big time.
Now, not giving away too much, but can you tell us what your did you have a different approach or strategy this time around?
No, exactly the same thing. One of the things I learned in the first season was, you know, you should stick to the rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, at some point, somebody didn't stick to the rules, and somebody lost. Mm-hmm. So. I learned how to play the game a lot better, not from a cooking standpoint, but from a personal standpoint.
Okay. And can you tell us what do you think are some of Chef Ann's strengths and weaknesses when it comes to this competition?
Let me tell you, Ann Burrell is an amazing teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. And she should be after she's done X amount of seasons of Worst Cooks. And I really do mean that when I say that. She is a tremendous teacher. I learn things from her. So sometimes her temper gets in the way of her, bless her, her feistiness. Well, you'll see what happens.
I say, when it comes to mentoring these the everyday people that try to improve their cooking skills, what is easy to teach and what is possibly the most difficult?
Well, I think, you know, for me, I'm lucky enough that I get to do that every day in my life around the world with my daytime job, you know, with the military and all these things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficult thing is to give confidence to somebody when they have a knife, right? And then give confidence that they can do something with speed without hurting themselves or burning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, listen, you're going to burn yourself. You're going to cut yourself. I do it. I've been doing it for 52 years. It's part of the job. But those that succeed listen, and they don't make the same mistakes twice. And in Worst Cooks, unfortunately, there's a very short window to learn. You know, the first episode, somebody's gone. And it's sometimes they don't get a chance to prove, and they could be really good. But at that particular time, at that particular moment, they're the worst one in that bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has bad days, including you and I and Anne. And
yep.
It's a race, and it's getting the stuff done the way we show you to do it, and then you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And it's funny to watch those that pick it up quickly, Those that don't, one thing that I am not a lover of is jokers in a kitchen. You know, I don't like people to play around. I'm too serious for that. I don't laugh. I don't get involved with people. I teach people. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the toughest part.
I would say one of my questions was going to be there's usually in competitions like this, there are some stock characters, one of which is somebody who thinks they're hysterical in the kitchen. So I know where you stand on that. Is there somebody like that in this season?
There's a lot of them.
Okay.
So you can imagine how my season is.
Let's see. There's usually somebody. Let me know if I'm correct or not. Is there usually somebody that is single and wants to do this for, or maybe is somebody that wants to do this for their girlfriend, boyfriend, or maybe their spouse?
Yep.
Somebody whose focus is really not happening.
A lot of.
Is anybody flirting with you this year?
Not so much me, but with Anne.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I know there's, yeah. So anyway, so, and also when it comes to doing these, how many, I mean, I know we have a different episode every week, but what's the timeline as far as filming these? How many weeks did it take?
It's a six week process.
Okay.
You know, it's a tough 6 weeks. These contestants work from early in the morning till late at night. They don't have the phones, and there's a set of rules and all these things that, so they can't look up recipes and don't, you know, They only get what we teach them, and they have to execute that. So it's pretty intense. I mean, it really is, you know, boot camp. So it's an intense 6 weeks.
Cool. And what I think what's fun watching you guys, because I've seen you and Ann do stuff on TV before, but you guys are able to find that line between competition, mentoring, and having a good time. Is that correct?
You know, there's one thing about Food Network which I love, you know, and I have loved since I started way back when. You know, we can be rivals, and and believe me, this is probably going to be tapped as the feistiest worst cook in history to date. Believe me. But I respect, and there is a line, and I always have fun. I always have fun. Does it get intense? Oh my goodness. Intense is an understatement, and I mean that. But at the end of the day, you know, we're doing something really good for all these folks that are there trying to do something. Even if they only last 2 or 3 weeks into the season, somebody's going to win the $25,000. Somebody's going to go home with stuff that they never knew but now feel more confident with. So I always like that part of these shows, you know. Like tonight I'm in Biloxi, Mississippi, and I get to see my winner, or you know, that I mentored in another competition. So, I like to see those folks who want to succeed, and that's what we do.
And I say, from an audience standpoint, it's fun for us if we've either been in that situation where we're sautéing with something or cooking with something, or we know when something goes right or something goes wrong. We learned right away, never try to prepare you shepherd's pie. That seems like that's a downfall.
Well, you know, the one thing I did in season two was I pushed the person that I have to be like a professional chef.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no excuses for me, and I'd done the same thing this time around. To me, if you're focused enough, you can achieve anything in this world with a great attitude, a can-do attitude, and that's how I teach. I'm intense, and if you listen, you will succeed.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying that we won, by the way. People in life will succeed if they listen to people that have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So, ladies and gentlemen, Worst Cooks in America is running Sunday, premiering Sunday, August 12th on Food Network. And Robert Irvine will be back for Kitchen Redemption. This almost sounds like your wife's line of work. We're cutting promos like they're wrestling matches. This is fun.
Yeah. She's over in England right now doing Comic-Con in England, which is, you know, bless her. And miss her a little bit, actually. It's kind of weird. But when you spend so much time together, and I'm on a tour right now doing a live show in Biloxi tonight. We're in Houston yesterday and Philadelphia the day before that. And we're in, Vegas tomorrow for a one-year anniversary.
Yes, congratulations on the Public House anniversary.
Yes, it's 28th Saturday, 1 year. In fact, we opened on the 27th.
and we celebrate on the 28th. So it's and that's going great. Tropicana is doing amazing, and the Penn Gaming team have been just amazing partners to us. So, yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks.
I bet.
Busy couple of weeks.
So just so folks know, can you tell us what is the difference between a public house and, say, a pub?
Well, public house, in reality, it is a pub, okay?
Right.
In England, if you say a public house, it's a pub.
Okay.
But in the States, it's slightly different. What public house means is a gathering place. And that's what I wanted to call it, because my dad used to enjoy a pint of beer and social in a pub every night, and I mean every night. And the pub itself, or the restaurant itself, and the bar area is set up like an old pub like we used to have in England.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very neat. It's called Pat's Bar. So everything, you see a picture of my dad in there, and my mum and dad are called Pat and Pat. That's, you know, so we have a Pat's for the ladies' restroom and a Pat for the men's restroom. It's just very quaint and cute, and the food is very quirky English, but mixed across the world of my travels with a twist. The bar is amazing. We've got our own tequila. We partner with Patron. You know, I'm in the liquor business.
Mm-hmm.
We have a vodka gin line with Boardroom Spirits out of Lansdale, Pennsylvania, which is all organic and natural and amazing. So we've really gone into it in a big way, and hopefully we'll open a lot more of those down the road sometime. A little smaller, because Vegas is 275 seats, which is a big restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and it gets packed. excuse me. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
And so, folks, just so you know, it's at the Tropicana in Las Vegas. In fact, the last time I was in Las Vegas, which was Thanksgiving week of 2016, the condo that I was staying at, when I opened the curtains in the morning, I saw a giant Robert Irvine posing on the side of the hotel building. So thanks for looking.
But it's still there.
Is it still there? he's watching over me. My gosh.
Yeah, it's when you fly in, it's kind of scary, actually, to see these things. And, you know, it's like a billboard night. It's so funny because social media, I get people saying at the MGM, at the Trop, and all these other places, and they send me pictures on Twitter every day. Hey, we saw you today. You know, it's just funny. We have a cardboard cutout of me in the restaurant when I'm not there, or even when I'm there. It's mm-hmm. just funny.
Also, speaking of which, so you also have your any updates as far as your food line and the Fit Crunch?
Well, Fit Crunch is doing amazing. It's in, 170 countries, 84,000 locations. We just bought out protein powder. We're about to bring out little protein balls, little snacks,
mm-hmm.
and protein bark. The food line, we're about 30-something SKUs all across the country, commissaries and the military. So that's doing great. We just shot a new show, pilot for CBS. Which is amazing. I can't tell you too much about it.
Okay.
But it's all kids involved. So there's a lot of great things happening, and we've just hired an amazing guy by the name of David Reed, special operations guy, lost his leg in Afghanistan 2010. So he's just come on board to run our foundation, as that's getting bigger and badder, as I say. You know, we're doing a lot of charity stuff and making things happen for our men and women that work the Cloth of Our Nation. We're growing strong. The Pentagon's doing amazing. We just got into the coffee business, so we're looking to hire all our veterans into these new coffee locations, train them, and then give them the actual coffee shop.
Okay.
So, you know, philanthropy is my thing. It excites me to do things for other people. It really does, you know. And people say, well, you know, you can do that, you make a lot of money. And you know, Matthew, that I give a lot of money away.
Yep. I ask him for $20 all the time, folks.
And it makes me feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I don't know how to explain when you help somebody what it feels like when you go to bed at night. It's just you feel good.
And that's
what this whole team, starting from Justin, who sets the tempo, and the rest of the team around the country, and we've got a lot of people now. You know, we're almost 700 people. So, you know, it's a good thing. Growing is good. A lot of pains that go with that.
Yep.
But it's just, life is good. TV is good. You know, we've been on Food Network now for, even though the shows have played and reran and we've done Food Network Star. Actually, Food Network Star this Sunday. I'm on there this Sunday.
Excellent.
In the finale. So that's pretty cool. So I've got a chance to do a lot of great stuff. Just that Restaurant Impossible was not on, although we aired, you know, almost 13 seasons on it all over the world. Mm-hmm. And it does great on the reruns, too. I hope one day, and I mean this, that somebody big out there is listening and we can bring that back in a different format, bigger, because I think it, if you remember, we did 183 episodes of that show and touched a lot of people's lives,
yep.
Not only in the restaurant business, but the Paul Newman camp, the Joplin, the Lottery, Mississippi, where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
We did an awful lot of good work with that show, so I'm hoping it'll come back at some point, and hopefully Dinner Impossible.
Yep. Well, ladies and gentlemen, and never forget, there's a lot of shows where they're rescuing things and restoring things. Never forget, there's a certain gentleman, he's on the show right now, who started it all. It's kind of like blues songs getting covered by rock bands later on. So this is the original deal right here.
Yeah, you know, the funny part is, I'm flattered that Gordon Ramsay is doing the 24 hours of hell, or whatever it's called. Don't know how you can fix something in 24 hours. We did it in 48, and I had real statistics. I think after the first year of touching every restaurant, that 183, we had 74% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are six and a half years later, and I still believe we're at 54% of restaurants that are open. So.
And that's a tough line of work to begin with. So, yeah. Did I hear you connected with John Taffer?
John Taffer and I have been friends for a long, 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 long time. He is an amazing human being. He's big, he's bold, he's brash. And somebody say, well, that's you. And I'm like, no, John's a little bit more than me.
Mm-hmm.
So I met John at an airport, funnily enough, many, many years ago when he was coming back off vacation with his wife, and Gail and I were together. And he walked into a club. And I'd been tweeting back and forth with him for a long time. And we finally got face-to-face and become great friends. And we did the NRA show, the National Restaurant Show in Chicago. There was John and I on a panel. And the opening to that panel was we both walked out left and right stage and just stared at each other. And then we went to punch each other. Oh, it was hilarious. And the pictures that came out of that were amazing. And I've always wanted to work with John.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I will, because I just find him with the same kind of person. He's so knowledgeable about what he does. I just did a podcast. And here's something about John. He donated $5,000 to my foundation on that podcast, which was a shock. He didn't need to do that, but it was very kind of him. Just a great guy. So, yeah, we're in fact, Monday in Vegas, he'll be at the restaurant with me, if not tomorrow. He did say he's going to try and come, but I just love the guy.
I think you two should do karaoke together.
That would be hilarious. Have you seen the size of John Taffer? He's a big guy.
Or you guys could form a tag team, you know.
Yeah, it would be. Gail would like that. I mean, Gail would love that in a wrestling. He could be our manager or something. I don't know. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
Has Gary Sinise asked you to play tambourine in his band yet?
I've been playing tambourine with Gary for 7 years, and I suck at it. It's so funny because on the last song of every concert that we play with our military at the hospitals, you know, we do the Invincible Spirit Festivals, and on the last song, I always go up and I play the cymbals. And the bongo box and all these other little tricks that they have there. And it's so funny because the first time I did it a long time ago, and I'm musically tone deaf. And I mean, there isn't a musical body in me, note in me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, they're just telling me tap, tap, tap. And when you reach these certain notes, you know, you bang the cymbals and you do this. Well, I was banging the hell out of these cymbals. And Gary just turns around because it sounds wrong in his ears. And he just looks at me. He's like, no. So I do it every time we do the show now.
Well, let's just let Gary saute something. That'll balance it out.
He's an amazing patriot. I call him the Bob Hope of the modern day era, giving himself to our troops. And, you know, we'll be in Germany together in August doing the same thing.
I got to see him do a Streetcar Named Desire on stage in Chicago, and it was extraordinary.
Yeah, his theater there does really well. You know, he has a theater there.
Yep.
And he's just opened almost like a museum in L.A. of you know, the start of his foundation, mm-hmm. which was a Bush era, and it was Bush that taught him to start it, and he's done so many great things with that. You know, we work together a lot. And it's so funny because we do a Sky Bowl event every year in Dallas, Fort Worth for 12,000 folks. And we had Tim McGraw and Faith Hill there and Pitbull and all these other guys, and Gary. And we had military chefs feeding, you know, the military wounded and their caregivers and families, which is an amazing feeling. But now we've just taken a Sky Bowl, which is a snowball, which is the kids' piece, where we take about 4,000 kids, and it used to be in Dallas every year. We take them for a week, and Terry Fader and some great folks would entertain, and we cook. And now that has come under Gary's umbrella of the Gary Sinise Foundation, and now we're taking it to Disney. So the kids that have lost a parent through war get a chance that they probably would never have ever got to go to Disney and spend a week and have all the benefits that they should have. Mm-hmm. So if all the listeners out there and they want to donate, it's very expensive. Go to Gary Sinise Foundation or the Robert Irvine Foundation.org, and you can help us out. Or volunteer, you know.
Exactly. Going back a little bit to the spirits, is that available? Is that just available on? I know it's on the East Coast, but is it in just? Commissaries.
We've just started in Nevada.
Okay.
New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and we are about to start in Florida. So at some point I will put up where you can get it. All ABC stores in Florida you'll be able to get soon. All state stores in Pennsylvania. Mr. Lee's in Nevada, and obviously the hotels.
Okay.
And again, we just started to roll it out, but I've got to tell you, it is an amazing quality. If you like Tito's, you're going to love this because we're going to blow Tito's out of the water.
And by the way, Fort Benjamin Harrison in Indianapolis could really use a coffee shop. I'm just saying.
Really?
Sure.
Ah, okay. So, well, we're really excited about that project. There were some big meetings this week on it, and I went to Honduras. I met the four farmers that are growing my coffee. And there's another thing, you know, I end up going to Honduras. I meet these farmers. I find a little coffee shop, funny enough, called Hope Coffee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And above that coffee shop is the school, where in Honduras it's very tough. You know, you have to pay for your schooling. And an average coffee grower makes $8,000 a year. So we got involved in there and sourcing out computers for these kids. To, you know, things happen for a reason. I don't know what those reasons are, but I had the most amazing trip to Honduras, and understanding the culture, the food, how the coffee and the problems with the coffee and the problems with the schools. And it's just amazing. You know, we are so blessed in this country that we have what we have.
Exactly. And we also have I always explain to younger people, it's when it comes to food, drink, what have you, it's the never ending battle between quality versus quantity.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously the price of that, where people, we got to think about when you sell something, what is the price of that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough, and it gets tougher to produce a quality product when people are not going to pay the extra 50 cents or whatever. And quality is always going to be driven by me. I don't, cost to me, I'll figure cost out, but the quality has to be there. Otherwise, we don't do it.
Right. Now, if I remember right, you like your coffee a very particular way. Is that still the case?
Yes, I still drink my coffee at 200 degrees. Three raw sugars, stirred six to the left, right, six to the left, four to the right. Yeah, I'm a freak.
he, ladies and gentlemen, he keeps a thermometer with him at all times just for such emergencies.
I do. That is true. And it's funny, you know, we just did some great stuff with Coca-Cola. You know, we did the Coca-Cola 600, which was a Grand Marshal, which was so exciting. And I didn't even know, I don't know if you knew this, but Coca-Cola, if you imagine every military action that we've had since the beginning, Coca-Cola's been there.
Really?
And I saw this in, yeah, and I 75 years plus, you know, of modern day, obviously. And I saw all these museum pieces. Unbelievable. So, you know, Coca-Cola's doing a great job. So thanks to them for our military support, too. So that's a lot of fun with them, guys. A lot of fun.
And it's always good if it's still out there. If you find Coca-Cola in glass bottles, that means they're actually using real sugar as opposed to corn syrup.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yes. I mean, if you're going to indulge.
If you're going to do it, and it's like eating cheesecake, at least eat a good one that's got some good stuff in it.
Exactly. All right, shifting gears a little bit, because this is a film show. What was the last film you watched, sir?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. What did we watch? What have we watched? We watched two shows back to back, and I'm trying to think what the name of them are. Hang on a minute. I should have had this, shouldn't I?
if you'd known there was a quiz, you'd have studied.
I watched Skyscraper. I watched, what was the other one I just watched? Oh my goodness. Hang on a minute. I've got to check scale.
Check here. All right. While he's doing that. Worst Cooks in America premieres Sunday, August 12th on Food Network. Robert Irvine, always here at Film Sociology. I know he just recently watched Skyscraper. Was it the other Dwayne Johnson film? Was it Rampage?
No, it wasn't. No. It was, hang on.
This is great.
I'll tell you exactly what it was. I know, it's kind of funny, right?
It's great, intense scrolling sequences on radio.
You know what?
Well, Mamma Mia is one you're looking forward to.
I know Mamma Mia is one I'm looking forward to, but that wasn't what I watched. It is, because I'm a nut about ABBA, but... what was the other one? Oh my goodness, that is killing me right now. I do want to watch the new Mission Impossible one.
Well, I just saw.
Watch. You saw it?
I saw it last night. You'll love it.
And I want to watch The Equalizer because I love Denzel Washington.
Yep, we like mature gentlemen kicking butt. Always a favorite.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Robert, because
you know the movies I like the most.
Yes.
And this was a movie. I just got to figure out what the name was. Where there's an underlying message to society in it. You know, some movies that we find are you know, true life stories that have been kind of Hollywoodized.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some that are life lessons. And I like the life lesson movies a lot, you know. Whether it be with culture, whether it be with race, religion,
mm-hmm.
I like to learn something. And of course, you know, movies, we take a little Hollywood-esque approach to, but there's always, you know, when they say a true life story, there's always a lesson there.
Mm-hmm.
And I find them to be the kind of movies that I like to watch.
Well, the lesson learned in Equalizer is stop messing with Denzel Washington.
But I consider myself, I would like to be one of them guys.
Well, I saw you.
What is he doing? Taking care of people.
Yes. Well, going back a little bit with Mission Impossible, I saw you rappel off the side of a hotel building. I mean, that's something. I think that's something Mr. Cruise would do in his spare time as well. Has that been the craziest stunt you've done, sir?
I think it is. You know, I've jumped out of planes at 15,000 feet, et cetera. But to me, when I said. I was joking when I said it, you know, oh, well, let me just rappel off the building or rappel off a helicopter. It will make a big, big splash. And then when we rigged and it was jerry-rigging an L bar, if you like. It looked just like an L. Mm-hmm. And I was going to rappel off it, but it didn't look like it could hold anything. So my first attempt, I was a little nervous, to say the least. It's 300 feet plus in the ground, above the ground, 28 stories. And I got to about the 17th floor, and the wind pushed me around, and I got back down and went back up. And as I was about to start the second rappel, a helicopter showed up, and it was a news helicopter, thinking that it was somebody going to jump off the top of the roof. So we had to do that really quick. But, you know, I wanted to make a splash in Vegas that nobody's ever done. And like Tom Cruise doing his own stunts, I thought, well, right, let's do it. I didn't think they would ever let me do it, but we did it.
Yep, and you're still here talking about it. That's good. No, Mission Impossible is about 2.5 hours, but it's constantly moving. And it's got the right balance of action and fun stuff and the disguises. So I think you'll enjoy these.
Well, I like him as an actor, and I like that he is he's a good guy,
mm-hmm.
right? I am looking forward to Mamma Mia. You know, I'm an ABBA fan, ridiculous ABBA fan, always have been. I will play Winner Takes It All before my Dinner Impossible days, every show,
mm-hmm.
every show. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, now I know Gail is a big sriracha fan. Have you guys done sriracha lime popcorn?
She has.
Okay.
I won't do that. I am just getting into. I'll put a little bit in soy sauce when I'm having a pot sticker or something. But I am really, I'm not that heat guy.
Okay.
And she is. She, you know, she has it for oatmeal and breakfast. You know, Gail puts sriracha on everything.
Now, if I remember correctly, are you still not a fan of cinnamon?
So here's the thing. Well, it's a good story.
Okay.
So, I just finished a show with Travel Channel. And one of the things I was following was cinnamon. Cinnamon as we know it, which is cassia. So I started my journey in Salem, which you think of Salem as witches. But actually, Salem was the first city that produced millionaires, and it came from cinnamon. So I started in my journey in cinnamon in Salem, and then I actually went to Sri Lanka. Cinnamon in this country, we use a lot of cassia, which is very peppery and bitter, which is the one I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Sri Lanka, which was built for the cinnamon trade, the British India Company came in, they built a fortress called Sri Lanka, to protect the cinnamon because it was so so expensive and you know so protected. Then the Dutch came in, beat the British, and did the same thing, kept the cinnamon. So in Sri Lanka, we have real cinnamon, which is, I find, amazing. It's a little bit more expensive, but it's way better. I don't like cassia, but I do like real cinnamon from Sri Lanka.
Okay, so we have to look for that. I think of you because I do the what I tend to do is when I grill peaches, I put a cinnamon, equal parts cinnamon and sugar, and I put it on the sliced half, and then put those on the grill.
Nice.
So.
Well, if you use the real cinnamon, you will love it.
Well,
it's not bitter and it's not sweet. It's just perfect. And I actually got to go to an island, the cinnamon island. I got to strip the cinnamon tree itself, dry it, and I got to cook in an authentic Sri Lankan home with these three family members. And I brought cinnamon back with me because it was that good.
And when will this air? Do you know?
Somewhere in August. We did two shows on salt, truffles, cinnamon, and oil.
Okay.
And chocolate, sorry.
Nice. That'll be the Travel Channel in August. And, of course, Worst Cooks in America premieres Sunday, August 12th on Food Network. Robert, I know we're short on time, but I really, really appreciate your time always. And get some breathing time.
Yeah, I've got to remember that. I'm going to take you back when I remember this movie because it was so good.
I will update the listeners. That was prime radio. I really appreciate your time, Robert, always.
Oh, man. I hope you guys are doing well. And it's a crazy time at the moment, but all is great. So we appreciate you, and just nuts right now. Keep sending me the pictures and stuff, and I'll keep in contact, okay?
All right, we'll do.
All right, buddy.
All right, take care. You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Robert Irvine, always fun to have him on the show. And at the time of this taping, ladies and gentlemen, we still don't know what was the film he saw and really liked, but cannot remember the title. So he's a really good sport. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back after the break, we'll catch up on some new releases. And I want to play some audio that I wasn't able to get to on last week's show. So stick around. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Hi, I'm Robert Irvine, and you're listening to Film Sociology, WFI in Indianapolis.
Hey, this is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
This is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
If you see me on the street, I'll tell you the story on that one. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. And once again, a friendly reminder, the show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. All right, before I get to the reviews of what's opening this weekend, I did not get a chance to do the audio version of Dead People We Like last week, and damn it, I worked on it quite a bit, so here we go.
Hey, this has been Fiction and Fact from Morty Lee's Almanac, and now, direct from Crete, welcome to Silky Smooth Sound of Aaron and Adrian Crowley.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me, or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early. Speaking of early, how about that Cro-Magnon Marty Drywitz? Thank you, Marty, for silky smooth sound. Make me sound like Peggy Lee.
Good morning, Vietnam. What the heck is that supposed to mean?
I don't know, Lieutenant. I guess it means good morning, Vietnam.
And who gave anyone permission to program modern music?
Freddie and the Dreamers.
Wrong speed. We've got it on the wrong speed. For those of you who are recovering from a hangover, that's going to sound just right.
Let's pull it right back down again. Let's try it a little faster, see if that picks it up a little bit. Let's get up on 718. Those pilots are going right now. I really like the music. I really like the music. I really like the music. Oh, still a bad song.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's try something.
Let's play this backwards and see if it gets any better. Woof, this new hit, Freddy is the devil. Woof, this new hit, Freddy is the devil.
Picture a man going on a journey beyond sight and sound. He's left Crete. He's entered the demilitarized zone.
All right. Hey, what is this demilitarized zone? What do they mean, police action?
Sounds like a couple of cops in Brooklyn going, no, she looks pretty to me. Hey, whatever it is, I like it because it gets you on your toes better than a strong cup of cappuccino.
What is a demilitarized zone? Sounds like something out of the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, no, don't go in there.
Oh, hee, ho, Ho Chi Minh.
Oh, look, you've landed in Saigon. You're among the little people now.
We represent the Arvern Army, the Arvern Army. Oh, no, follow the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Follow the Ho Chi Minh Trail.
Oh, I'll get you, my pretty. Oh, my God, it's the Wicked Witch of the North. It's Hanoi Hannah. Now, little G.I., you and your little toodoo, too. Ah, ha, ha,
Adrian, what are you doing, Adrian?
Oh, Hannah, you slut. You've been on everything but the Titanic. Stop it right now.
Oh, you know, he's really funny. He's like a Marx brother.
And which Marx brother would that be, Private? Zeppo? I don't find him funny at all.
Zeppo? Is he the one with the hat?
Hey, hi, can you help me? What's your name? My name's Roosevelt Lee Roosevelt. Roosevelt, what town are you stationed in? I'm stationed in Poontang. Well, thank you, Roosevelt. What's the weather like out there? It's hot. Damn hot. Real hot. Hot in this is my shorts. I can cook things in it. Little crotch pot cooking. Well, can you tell me what it feels like? Fool, well, it's hot. I told you again. Were you born on the sun? It's damn hot. You can be a little thing. I saw it so damn hot. I saw one of those little guys in the orange robe burst into flames. It's that hot. You know what I'm talking about. Well, what do you think it's going to be like tonight? It's going to be hot and wet. That's nice if you're with a lady, but it ain't no good if you're in the jungle. Thank you, Roosevelt. Here's a song coming your way right now. Nowhere to Run To by Martha and the Vandellas. Yes! Hey, you know what I mean.
Too much?
Good morning, Vietnam. It's just a smidgen past 6:05, and here we go with another day's version of the Dawn Buster Show from Armed Forces Radio. I'm Airman Adrian Kronauer, and for the next 4 hours, we've got the best in popular music for you here, so let's get started right now with music.
Kidding.
Ah, Roger, good to see you again.
Messrs. Bialystock and Bloom, I presume? Ha! Huh. Forgive the pun.
What pun?
Shut up, he thinks he's witty.
Roger, may I say you look gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Merci. Oh, by the way, Max, darling, we loved Funny Boy, didn't we, Carmen?
Oh, worshipped it. To be or not to be, you mean a lot to me.
Showstopper.
Fabulous.
Oh, dear. You're Mr. Bloom staring at my gal.
Oh, well,
I should explain. I'm going to the choreographer's ball this evening. There is a prize for best costume.
We always win.
I'm not so sure about this year. I'm supposed to be the Grand Duchess Anastasia, but I think I look more like the Chrysler Building.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, without your wig on, you're only half dressed.
Well, then, why don't you go and get it? Oh, wicked witch of the West.
If your intention was to shoot an arrow through my heart...
Bullseye!
Oh, Roger, let's face it. That building is you. Listen, I know we sent it to you only this morning, but did you get a chance yet to read Springtime for Hitler?
Read it? I devoured it, and I find it remarkable. Remarkable! I feel it is a very important piece drenched with historical goodies. Mm. I, for one, for instance, never realized that the Third Reich meant Germany.
Yeah, how about that? Then you'll do it.
Do it? Of course not. It's not my kind of thing. I mean, Max, please. World War II? Ooh, too dark. Too depressing. The theater's so obsessed with drama, so depressed, it's hard to sell a ticket on Broadway. Shows should be more pretty. Shows should be more witty. Shows should be more... What's the word?
Gay?
Exactly.
Dangling! Aiguchi da no! No.
列車の火事だ。バカだ。真剣ならばお主は倒れておる。では真剣に参ろう。無駄だ。何？わからんな。真剣ならばお主は死ぬ。無駄なことだ。待て。逃げるな。
So there you go, a little Dead People We Like medley. That was, of course, the last one was the sparring scene from Akira Kurosawa's The Seventh Samurai, written by Shinobu Hashimoto. This was a gentleman we mentioned did a lot of Kurosawa films, including Rashomon, Seven Samurai, Hidden Fortress, Ikuru, Throne of Blood, The Bad Sleep Well, and Doskaden. In fact, there's a group of guys I see movies with back in Richmond, and I introduced them to Throne of Blood this week, and that went over mostly very well amongst the group. So before that, Gary Beach as Roger DeBries in the musical film version of The Producers. He, of course, played it on Broadway. And before that, Robin Williams as Adrian Cronauer from Good Morning Vietnam, and then actual audio of Adrian Cronauer while he was in the while he was on the Armed Services Radio Network. So that was last week. So thank you for that. All right. I mentioned a little bit with Robert about the new Mission Impossible. Everybody's back for the most part. And it is once again written and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who worked on, he's the first returning director of the Mission Impossible series. He also directed a cruise in Jack Reacher, the first one. And of course, got known over 20 years ago for winning an Academy Award for writing The Usual Suspects. And as mentioned, this one is actually a connection to the last Mission Impossible film. They've been very good standalones, like a Bond film. And you don't necessarily have to go back and check out the last one to enjoy this one. If you want to, be my guest. Of course, the guys, there's a botched deal as far as picking up some nuclear devices and bombs and things. This time around, Henry Cavill, yes, Superman, with a mustache and beard. There was a big talk about that during some reshoots. Is along for the ride as a CIA operative and trained assassin. The film clocks in at almost 2.5 hours, and much to its credit, it keeps moving. It does not let up, and there's action throughout. I mean, beginning, middle, end. There's a little bit of breathing room, especially near the end when we have three conflicts going on at once. Yes, we get to see crazy Tom Cruise still doing his own stunts, and whoo, you know, the bigger the screen, obviously, the better. And what there's also a little bit of fun. We have the mask stuff, and most of the twists and turns you can see coming, but you still enjoy it nonetheless. So this is perfect summer popcorn fare. Is it top 10 of the year? No, but it's a lot of fun. So that is over there. Now, if that is not your cup of tea and you don't want to wait in line, there's a lovely film that opened this week called Eighth Grade. This is written and directed by Bo Burnham, and it's, well, about the grade, and it's about a young girl who is getting through her last week of eighth grade before entering high school. And this is a girl that's an outcast to a certain degree, not as a target, but because she's not really noticed. I wondered how much of this was going to be like Todd Zaslav's film Welcome to the Dollhouse from 20 years ago. And in that one, unfortunately, Miss Wiener was a target. This one, she does video podcasts or video YouTube clips about how to make it in the school world. And sometimes she's able to follow her own rules and sometimes she's not. But it's a lovely, down-to-earth, not a Hollywood attempt at school life. There's some moments that happen when it comes to possible bullying, being with boys, interacting with your dad, and I'll admit it's not done like John Hughes. Anytime we can have more rooted, down-to-earth films as opposed to Mr. Hughes's suburban fantasies in the 80s, yeah, I'm still kind of railing on those. This film, fortunately, does not do that. It goes in the opposite direction. It's a very, very sweet work from Elsie Fisher, as well as well, the whole group, really. And most of it I didn't really recognize. Josh Hamilton plays the dad, and there's moments that I could really understand, and others I was like, whew. Glad I didn't say that. But obviously for somebody my age, as a survivor of eighth grade and as a dad to a young girl, I could really, really relate. But it's a very sweet, nicely done film. There's a fun moment as I'm watching the movie last week where the ladies next to me were saying, poor girl. I went, oh, yeah, yeah. No, they said, poor dad. And I really wanted to say, poor girl. Don't get, you know, dad's doing okay. He's doing the best he can. But anyway, Eighth Grade is a can't miss and one of the better films this summer. Also in theaters is a really uneven biopic from Gus Van Sant called Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot, about comic artist John Callahan, played by Joaquin Phoenix, a man who was crippled in a car accident, and how he found his way of communicating through his art, through cartooning, and also had to fight alcoholism. And Joaquin Phoenix is solid. Jonah Hill is in this. Also solid work as his sponsor. Jack Black has a couple moments, especially the second scene that he is in. It's kind of the big moment. Rooney Mara, as much as we adore Rooney Mara, has to play the one-dimensional, almost dream girl. Not manic pixie, but the cinematic dream girl that I wish we all had, whether we were in a crippling accident or not. Solid work from Phoenix. The film goes back and forth between the end of the story, as well as him going through his rehab and dealing with his addiction and dealing with his handicap, his current situation. Goes back and forth. If you get a chance, read Richard Probst's takedown of this film on The Independent Critic. It's a really, really good read. But the film it also has the feeling of, and I'm borrowing this term from Ed Johnsonat from Nuvo, it does at times have the feeling of an R-rated after-school special. So that is an uneven affair, but solid work from Joaquin Phoenix and most of the rest of the cast. There is one other dead person we like note, especially with a PBS link. Bill Loud died this week at the age of 97. For you documentary history buffs, he was the father in the 1973 PBS series An American Family. So there's some reality TV right there. Just a friendly reminder that this is the last weekend of the Midnight Movies at Keystone Arts, and it's Akira happening Saturday night at midnight, so always fun there. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, Screen 1, Mission Impossible Fallout, and The First Purge. Okay, Screen 2, also opening this weekend, Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and Hotel Transylvania 3, two PG animated films. Screen 3, Equalizer 2, and Sorry to Bother You. Screen 4, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and Skyscraper. One for her, one for him. And over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville, you have Mission Impossible, Fallout, and Skyscraper. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week, kind of a small group. The big title is Ready Player One, or as Taffy DeVitt likes to call it, Dude Nostalgia, based on the very popular book about life in a video game and trying to get forward through a video game. It at times feels like an infomercial for the Warner Brothers catalog. I always like Mark Rylance, and he's in this as kind of the Steve Jobs type, Mark Zuckerberg type of character. But it does have the feeling of a very expensive 80s underdog movie. Rocky or The Karate Kid or any. I know Rocky was in the 70s. But yeah, so it kind of has that underdog feel to it. And also, I want to give a special shout out to Ben Mendelsohn, who was able to capture the kind of 80s authoritative D-bag character. The only other film of note was what is supposed to be, I think, the final film from Michael Haneke called Happy End with Isabelle Huppert and Toby Jones and a family crisis. And we kind of expect something much heavier from Michael Haneke and not quite. It kind of goes out with a whimper instead of a bang compared to his earlier work. So there you go. All right. Also trying to catch up on a few home videos that were sent. And then all of these, actually, the one thing in common, they were all sent to me by Film Movement. Yeah, I get sent films. If you're in detention, especially in a single location, so it's not just for Panic Room. This is better than Panic Room, better than The Purge, The First Purge. The First Purge film, sorry. a really intense drama called In Syria, where a family is trapped in their house in Damascus while war is going on outside. So you have the conflicts inside the house as well as outside the house, but very claustrophobic, very well done. And then there's a film called a kind of a romantic comedy called Oh Lucy, starring Shinobu Terajima, a young lady working in an office. I should say a woman of age working in her office in Japan. She winds up taking English classes from an American instructor played by Josh Hartnett. And when he winds up disappearing, she has feelings for him in a conflicted way, and she winds up following him all the way to California. So there's the shy person, introverted person coming out of their shell, and then we have a bit of a road trip picture. And two of the film's executive producers are Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, which got it a little bit of a festival release. But a really sweet performance from Terajima. Hartnett's good as the kind of eclectic instructor who we find out, especially when in California, has more of a past behind him. And some things happen between the woman's sister and her daughter and the Josh Hartnett character that I don't want to reveal, but it's definitely worth checking out. And then we have a film called Hotel Salvation, set in India, where a gentleman of age finds out he thinks he's on the brink of dying, and talks his son into taking him to the title of the film. And this is a hotel that is accommodating for people who are about ready to die and to prepare for death. So elder father and not as elder as the father, but older, father and son have to have some reconciliation, especially this late in both of their lives. A fun review from the Times said if the best exotic Marigold Hotel had been remade by Ingmar Bergman, it's not quite that dark, but nice work between the two actors and some lovely footage, especially near the water. But a nice bit of film, type of thing that shouldn't and hopefully will not be remade in Hollywood. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, that's really about it for this week. But I want to thank Robert Irvine and company. I should say David Sabin. He's the gentleman who chimed in and gave us Mamma Mia while Robert was having a brain freeze. And really good sport. As soon as I find out what was the other film that was stuck in his head, I will let you know. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
I had a Columbo impression. One other note, sorry. On Friday, August 3rd at 7 p.m. at the IMAX Theater at the Indiana State Museum is the Found Footage Festival Salute to Nerds. So go check that out in downtown Indy. The Found Footage Festival, Salute to Nerds, Friday, August 3rd at 7 p.m. at the IMAX Theater, Indiana State Museum. That's, of course, 650 West Washington Street. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Cinnamon girl, I can be happy the rest of my life with a cinnamon girl. I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!